We're glad that you're here tonight. As I announced this morning, if you are a part of this group, you need to be here tonight. And to those of you who are visiting, we're glad you're here. This will be a little bit different from what we might normally do on a Sunday night, but hopefully at the same time you'll be benefited from being here and being a part of the service that we have offered before God. As we announced this morning and have been announcing now for the last number of weeks, we're in the process of seeking to appoint some new deacons. And we've studied two lessons, one where we discussed the role of a deacon, the other where we discussed the qualification of a deacon. And now the final lesson in the beginning of the process, I guess you would call it, where we talk about the process that we'll be using for selecting further deacons from among ourselves. As we think about this, this is in many ways a very exciting time for us. It's great that we have come to a point where there may be other men who are qualified to serve. It is also good that we're at a point where we need more men to serve in that capacity. You can find yourself in a position where there's not work to be done for men such as deacons to do, but that's certainly not the case here, and that's a good thing. Basically, the outline that I want to follow tonight is I want to briefly review the material we've already studied, where we talk about the role, talk about the qualifications. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. Then I want to discuss with you and present to you the process by which we will make the selection. And then we're going to pass out the form and then go over that form and make sure that everybody understands what is being expected of us over the course of the next couple of weeks. As we think about what we have talked about, I appreciate Andrew reading the passage he read, and because it certainly reminds us of what we have already talked about so far. When we begin to consider the role of a deacon, as we've mentioned in the past, this is not something we're using to honor a good man. These need to be good men who fill that role. But we are not seeking to somehow bestow honor upon someone who we feel like honor needs to be bestowed. It is also not a position that we don't understand or that we're just trying to fill because that's what God tells us to do. It is something that has a very definite purpose. It has a very definite function. And men who are put in that position have a definite role that they must play as they serve as deacons in the church of God. It is not a position that is being used to strengthen some weak brother who we don't feel like is doing what he ought to do. So we think, well, maybe if we make him a deacon, that will somehow inspire him to greater service. That has nothing to do with it. These are men who must be proven, the passage says. These are men who must be found blameless. These are not men that we look at as weak men who we are now putting in a position where hopefully they'll get a little bit stronger. And certainly a deacon is not a mini elder. He is in no way in the position of an elder. He is in subject to the elders. And as we consider that, he is not one that later on we even perhaps expect to become an elder. That may happen. But that does not have to be the case. There may be a man who qualifies himself to serve as a deacon and serves in that capacity very, very well, but never qualifies to serve as an elder. We're seeking those men who are qualified to serve as deacons. What is a deacon? A deacon is a servant. He is an especially appointed servant of the church. As we consider that, he is a very special kind of man, and he has a very special kind of family. As we consider what a deacon is, he is one who is tremendously valuable to a church when he functions in the role in which God has placed him. As we consider what deacons do, they have a tremendous responsibility in relieving the burden that is placed on the elders. As we consider the role of an elder is to shepherd the flock that is among them, and they can become very distracted by some of the everyday routine kind of things that have to go on, and deacons can relieve that distraction. Deacons can serve in the role of a servant to those elders. They're men who are responsible, and they're men who can be trusted. They are men who we can give a task and expect them without interference to carry that task out to the very best of their ability. And there are many tasks that they can handle as they assist the elders in the role that they will play. We've listed out those in the past. I'm not going to take the time to do that, but there are many, many, many things that men who serve as deacons can do. And as I look at Sam and at Tony, and as you see what Sam and Tony are doing, I think you would agree that that's a tremendous responsibility that they take on and a number of things that they find themselves responsible for. They have a responsibility to work very closely with the elders, and yet at the same time they find themselves under the rule of the elders. They're not, as I said, many elders who are making decisions for the group. They're working in subjection to the men who are in that position. They must be trusted enough to be given the freedom to carry out the responsibilities that they are assigned. They're men that we can have confidence in. We've got to be able to trust them. The elders have to be able to trust them so that when they give them a task or give them a responsibility, they don't have to worry about whether it's going to get done or whether they're going to do it in a way that would be appropriate. They can be trusted and be given the freedom to do what they need to be doing. It's a very valuable role that a man will play to the congregation that meets here at Pepper Oak. This is not some kind of lighthearted selection process. This is a very serious thing that we enter into tonight. May we do that, and may we realize the tremendous burden that falls on us to select men who are qualified to serve in this capacity. As we consider the qualifications of a deacon, I think when we come to understand that role and we understand what they are to do and kind of the role that they are to play in the Church of God, I think it helps us to understand better why the qualifications are laid out as they are. As we look at 1 Timothy chapter 3, as Andrew just read for us, first thing is listed there to be reverent. The idea, I think, is that of serious-minded. They carry about in themselves the dignity that comes with being a child of God. As we look at them, we see them as men of high respect. We see them as men who are very serious-minded, who know when to be serious and to know when to have a good time. They are men that we have confidence in. Paul goes on and he mentions the fact that they're not to be double-tongued. They don't talk out of both sides of their mouths, and I think that says enough. We know what a person is when he does that. A deacon is not to be that kind of a person. They're to be reverent, not double-tongued, not given to much wine. They don't allow substances to affect their ability to make decisions. This is a qualification that has come to be terribly abused in so many cases as they have taken this and completely twisted it. But the idea here is that these are men who are very serious-minded. These are men who are in control of themselves. They're in control of their appetites. They are men who make decisions with a very, very clear head. They're not greedy for money. They understand that the true riches lie in things beyond this life. They don't find themselves so distracted with the earning of a living that they find themselves unable to serve God. They are men who are truly focused on the things that are important. He goes on and he says, holding the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. The idea, I think, being that they're committed to sound teaching. They're committed to upholding the principles that are laid down in the New Testament and upholding those as they walk among us and as they serve even us and as they serve as an example to us. They will be given a responsibility, as our deacons have, perhaps in some role in the classes, in selecting of teachers, and assigning different responsibilities in that way. And we've got to be sure that these are men who are sound in their doctrine. They are men who hold the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. And I think Paul sums all this up when he says they're to be found blameless. They're to be found proven. They are men who we have complete and total confidence in. And as they walk among us and as we look at them, they are men who are above reproach. It's interesting that Paul then goes on and discusses some about their family. He mentions that they're to be the husband of one wife. That would indicate that he's not an adulterer. It would also indicate that he is a man who has only had one wife. I think that's fairly clear. And it also, I think, points out the importance of his family. You know, I think it's very easy for us at times to get focused in on the man and making sure we go through these qualifications and we get the microscope out and make sure that everything fits just right and then we make the selection, perhaps even overlooking the role that they're to play. But at the same time, we've got to focus on their families. Their families will play a major part and have a major responsibility in the role that they will play as they serve as a deacon. As we consider that, it seems that the wife has particular importance in this particular scenario. There's some qualifications actually listed that she must meet in order for that man to be qualified to serve. She must be a woman who can be trusted. She must be a godly and God-fearing woman. She must be someone that we don't look at as one who is a talker, as one who is a gossip, but rather as one who we trust, that when she might receive information that others might not be privy to, that she can keep that to herself, and we don't have to worry about the things that she might say. As we consider his children must be exemplary of the children that a Christian should have. He is to have children who he has control of. As we look around us and we see him as a father, what are we seeing? Has he proven himself as one who is raising his children as he should? As we look at him and as we look at his wife and as we look at his children, what we see is a Christian home where we see the Bible principles laid down for what a Christian home ought to be established in that home, and we can look to them as examples of what we should be as we strive to seek to grow in our knowledge and understanding of what it is to be a Christian. But let me hasten to add this. These qualifications are not the same as the qualifications for an elder. They're different. There's no question about it. It seems that as we read these qualifications, that age does not seem to be as important. The idea behind the very word elder means one who is older. I think that's pretty obvious. That is not the case with the deacon. The other difference where we see some things there is in the things that are said about the children. A deacon, the idea of believing children is not mentioned. He is just one who rules his house well. Age does not seem to be quite as important as it is with an elder. The other thing that is not mentioned, and I brought this out before, is it is not mentioned that he must be apt to teach. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's not, but it does mean that that is not quite as important as it would be for an elder, and that certainly is understandable when we begin to consider the difference in the roles that each of those two men will play. So what do we see? We see a great man. We see a man that we can trust, a man that we can have complete confidence in, a man that can be given responsibility and be expected to carry that out. We see a man who is what a Christian ought to be as he walks among us. That's what we're looking for as we seek to appoint men to serve as deacons for the church that meets at Pepper Road. And as you begin to think about this, and I hope you have already been thinking about this, but as you get your form and you begin to write names down, or you begin to contemplate whose name you might write down, make sure you're taking these things into consideration. I think sometimes we look at the office of a deacon and we say it's just not that big a deal. But I'm telling you, it's going to have a major impact on the function and on the way that this church works together. And they can either work with the elders or they can work in opposition to the elders in some cases. And we need to find men who are truly going to be qualified to serve in this capacity. As I mentioned this morning, if we go through this process and no one is found to be qualified, that does not mean we have hit a brick wall or that we've been unsuccessful. It means we've been tremendously successful. Because we are not just seeking to appoint men for the sake of appointing men. We are seeking to appoint men who are qualified. And if there are not men who are qualified, if there are no men who are qualified, then the very best thing that can happen to us is for us not to appoint anybody. And I want to hasten to add that. I've said that as we sought to appoint elders some years ago, and as we sought to appoint deacons some period of time ago, and we say that again. And I know that David and Freed would both stand up and say a hearty amen to that, because it's so important that they can trust and be able to work with the men who will be selected. With that in mind, I want to talk a little bit about the process. There's going to be a time period involved here, and I want to try to lay that out for you as best I can. I don't have specific dates, but we will. I do have one, and that'll help us, I think. The forms are going to be passed out tonight, as a matter of fact, in just a few minutes. What we're going to do is we're going to have a two-week period for each of us to fill that form out and get that form back into either one of the elders, who will then go through the forms. So basically what we have is, beginning tonight, we'll begin a two-week period in which we are to have our forms filled out and turned back in. That turns out that those must be turned in by January the 4th, I think is what Tony figured up. January the 4th will be when all these forms need to be back in to Freed and to David. Now, that doesn't mean that you wait till January the 4th to do it. It also doesn't mean that when you get the form that you suddenly tune out everything else that's being said and start scribbling names down or start checking a box off, okay? Make sure you're thinking about this and make sure that time is put into this. But at the same time, let's not wait until the last minute in order to get this thing filled out and turned back in. Beginning tonight, two-week period to get the form filled out and turned back in to Freed and David. They will then have a week to basically compile the information, to get with, if there are any men's names who meet the criteria, to get with those men, make sure they're willing to have their name placed before the group. If there are none who are willing or none whose names meet the criteria, then they will announce that. But if not, then a week from that, which would be January the 11th, those men's names will be placed before the congregation as men who we are considering to appoint as deacons. At that point, beginning on January 11th and running for 2 weeks, we will have a two-week period in which to raise objection to the man whose name has been presented before the group. If we look at that man and we feel like there is something that would hinder him from serving as a deacon, or in some way feel that he is unqualified to serve, then we have a two-week period in order to get that objection raised and get that settled or get that taken care of. If there are no objections, or if objections have been answered, then following that two-week period, those men will be appointed to serve as deacons here. So if I've got that right, that would be January the 25th is when the process would be complete. I want, at this point, we're going to pass out the form. And I think Sam and Tony have those, and we're going to get this form passed out to you. And I want you to look at this, but I want you to bear with me, too, because we need to go over some of the things that are on the form so that you'll understand exactly what is being expected of you. What we're doing is we're handing out one of these to every member of the group. Anybody who is a member of the congregation at Pepper Road will be given one of these forms. There are numbers of, I'm going to say numbers, we're glad for the great attendance tonight. There are some who are not able to be here tonight. Sam and Tony are going to try to take care of figuring out who that is and make sure that they get their form. But we have the exact number of forms photocopied, as there are a number of members of the church here who are Christians. So that's the way this is going to work. Every member is going to receive one of these forms. Now, the next thing I'm going to point out is every member is going to be expected to turn one of these forms back in. We know how many, I think, what did you tell me, 93, Sam, is that what it was? I think there were 93 forms photocopied, and we're going to make sure that all of those get distributed to the members, and then we will be expecting when we count, when Fried and David count these forms up, that 93 forms have been turned back in. And that form is being passed out to you right now. As you look at the form, what is... Tony got this together for me this afternoon, then his printer went on the blink, and he apparently worked hard this afternoon getting this to Brad to get it printed out, and I want to express my appreciation to those guys because they were doing something that I couldn't do. As you look at this form, we've listed the qualifications at the top, which are basically the qualifications we've just gone through. They're found in 1 Timothy chapter 3. And as you are making your selection, as you are filling in this form, be sure you are looking at those qualifications and examining each one as it applies to each man to make sure that they are truly qualified to serve as you put that name down. I have listed on this form, we've got listed four different options from which you can choose. I think that given the situation that we currently have with a number of members who are very new to the group, who may not know everybody very well, and then some who are younger and different things like that, here's what I want to, here are the different selections that we've laid out to hopefully help us to be able to make a selection so that anybody can turn in a form and not feel like they've, for whatever reason, need to not do that. We've got four different things here. Number one, there at the top, where underneath where it says, please check only one, it says, I am new in the congregation and feel that I do not know the men well enough to judge their qualifications. There may be those who are very new to the group who, as you look around, you may not feel close enough or know the members of the group well enough to be able to make a selection. If that is the case, no problem. Make sure you check that box. Make sure you get that into Fried or to David. The second choice that we have there is that because of youth or other personal reasons, I feel that I should not participate in the selection process. There may be one of our young men or young women who just feel like they're too young to try to take this and go through it and try to make a selection based on that. If that's the case, that's fine. Check that box if you would. Make sure you get that form back into Fried or David. That is not a problem. We want to make sure that we get these forms back in. The third thing that we have listed there is I do not believe there are additional men who are qualified to serve as a deacon. It may be that as you go through the list and as you look at the different men who are part of this group and you're considering the qualifications, you may look at this and say, I just don't believe there's anyone else qualified. And if that's the case, check that. Make sure you check that. And make sure you get that form turned back in. And then, of course, the final one is that I believe we have others in the congregation who are qualified. They're listed below. We've listed 10 slots. If you've got 100 names, go ahead and write them down. I mean, you know, if you got 100, I'm a little concerned because we're only passing out 93 forms. So that means we're getting some women and some kids or something. I don't know. But anyway, make sure you list out the names of every man that you feel is qualified. If they're more than the 10, make sure you list them. There are a couple of things that I want to say here. If you don't believe that there are men qualified, be sure and put that. There's nothing wrong with that. This is not some kind of a guessing game where we're trying to figure out what somebody else is writing down. This is where we are making an honest evaluation of the group and of the men who are part of this group who may be qualified to serve. Make sure you're treating this very, very seriously. Make sure you fill this out in a way that would be appropriate. I want to stress again, 100% response is important. Okay? 100% response is important. Check one of those and make sure you get that form back in. Name is an optional thing. You don't have to put your name on it. That's not a problem. As Tony put up there at the top, that is completely optional. If you want to, that's fine. If not, that's fine as well. But make sure you fill one of these out and make sure you get that back in by January the 4th, which is 2 weeks from today. And then those names will be compiled that are listed. Let me tell you the criteria that is going to be used. And this is the same as what we used, I believe, with elders and deacons when we appointed last time. If a man's name is on at least 60% of the forms that will be turned back in, then he will be asked if he's willing to serve. So in other words, there's got to be a cutoff point in there somewhere. A lot of churches have used 50%. The elders have seen fit that we go with a 60% level on that. If a man's name is on 60% of those forms, then he will be asked if he's willing to be considered before the group is serving for a deacon. If it falls under that, then he will not be considered. And what that does is that makes sure that almost two-thirds of the group thinks about that man as they're filling out this form and puts his name down. Just to give you, for example, I think with the elders, when we did that, there was just tremendous percentages for Freed and David. It was just almost unreal to kind of think about this, okay? Don't let it happen that you've checked, I don't believe that there's a man qualified, and then the elders stand before us and mention a man's name and you go, I should have thought of him. Don't let that happen, okay? Make sure that we put some time and some effort into this selection process. I've just got down some things to remember that I want to run through with you very briefly. These are things I've been saying. I just want to make sure we hammer on them. Number one, put serious thought into this. This is not something to be taken lightly. These are going to be men who will take on a very serious responsibility and who will be serving us, and we need to make sure that they are qualified to do that. They're going to have a major impact on how the church here functions. Realize that as you are making your selections. The second thing, I want to make sure, I've hammered on it, I'm going to say it again, turn in the form no matter what the situation. When January the 4th comes to a close, be sure that Freed and David have 93 forms for them to flip through and make sure they get the information off of. Be sure we get all these forms in. Full cooperation is important. It is part of, I believe, of our responsibility as a member of this congregation. Because you know what will happen? Somebody says, I'm not going to participate in this, and so they don't turn in a form. The next thing you know, well, I didn't think that man was qualified to serve. Be sure you participate. This is really, really important to us functioning as a group as we should. Make sure that we have 100% cooperation as we get these forms back in. The third thing I want you to remember, and this is important, be completely honest. Be completely honest throughout this whole process. Write all the names that you feel are qualified. If you feel the man is qualified, make sure his name's on the page. If you don't feel there's anybody qualified, make sure you check that box. But whatever the case, as you're filling out this form, 100% honesty is going to be required. As I mentioned earlier, this is not some kind of a contest where we're trying to figure out what somebody else is going to say. And don't ever get the impression where you say, well, I don't think anybody else will put that guy down, so I'm not going to. If you feel the man is qualified, you need to put his name down on that form. Be sure you do that. It's going to be terribly important for us to make sure we're 100% honest as we fill these things out. We must have complete confidence in those men who are appointed. And the way to do that is by full cooperation and full honesty. If you come to a point, and 3 weeks from today, men's names are presented before this group, and you look at one of those men and you have an objection, you need to raise that objection. I'll say it again. If 3 weeks from today, men's names are put before this group, and with one of those men, you have some form of an objection based on a qualification, you need to raise the objection. Don't sit around thinking, surely somebody else will do it. Don't sit around thinking, well, I don't want to cause any problems. Make sure you raise the objection. Because if you don't, there may come a time when you wish you had. And this needs to be a situation where we're 100% honest, where we're raising objection. If objection needs to be raised, doing so in the right manner, that will be handled. That will be dealt with. If the man is qualified to serve, I guarantee you that he's going to deal with that objection in a way that would be appropriate. If he doesn't deal with that objection in a way that's appropriate, it has a definite impact on his qualification to serve. Be sure that if you have some problem with one of the men that you raise that, it's going to be important for that to happen. This does not need to become a stumbling block to us, but at the same time, we do need to make sure that we handle this in a way that would be appropriate. But one word of caution, and I would say make sure the objection is legitimate. Be sure it's well thought out. Be sure that as you present it in a loving way, in a way that would continue to keep us at peace, where it's not an accusatory, if I said that right, objection, but rather where you, in a very humble and contrite way, raise it. And I guarantee you, if you present it in the proper way, the man will respond in the proper way and will be able to work it out, one way or the other. So be sure that you're thinking about this, and if you do raise an objection, make sure it's legitimate, make sure it's thought out, and make sure you're prepared to do it in the way that you should. We can successfully come through this process. I don't have a doubt about it. We've done it before, and we can do it again. As I look out over the group, I feel that it is time for us to go through this process again, as the elders have stated that it is. I believe that we may have men among us who are qualified, be sure you think about that and be sure that you take them into consideration as you fill out your form. Men may or may not be appointed. But whatever the case, the point of this is for us to go through this in a way that will be pleasing to God. The point is that we maintain the kind of attitudes that a Christian should maintain. And I'll guarantee you that if all of us do that, then we're not going to have a problem whether we appoint men or whether we don't appoint men. And we need to be sure that we're handling ourselves in a way that is mature, and we're resolving this and approaching it in a way that would be appropriate. It's a challenge, but it's a challenge we can face and that we can overcome. And if the Lord wills, 5 weeks from today, we may be appointing new deacons. So that's the process. 2 weeks from today, have your form in. 1 week after that, the names will be presented, and then we'll begin a two-week process for objections to be raised. That's basically what I have. Can you think of anything I've missed, David, Sam? Have I laid the process out? Go ahead. Yeah, I believe that's the way we were planning to handle it. Make sure that goes to the elders. The elders will then arrange for that to be addressed with the man and for that to be taken care of. And we'll have more on that as far as specifics on how that will be handled as we draw up closer to that phase as well. Yeah. Yes. Right. That is not going to count. If one of the first two boxes is checked, which was for whatever reason, or I'm too young, or I haven't been a part of the group long enough, those will not count in that percentage as it goes in that 60%. Because that's someone saying, I just don't feel like I can choose. And that will not be counted as far as the 60%. The 60% will be counted from those who either say, I don't feel there's a man qualified, and from those who have written down men that they do feel are qualified. Those first two are in there so that everybody can comfortably turn in a form and state their particular situation. And that way we can get that 100% cooperation without you feeling like you've got to say nobody's qualified or here's who I think are qualified. But the 60% will be based on those final two, those who either say none or those who write down a man's name. Does that make sense? Everybody understand that pretty well? Okay. If not, you can ask later. Well, this is going to be a good time for us. We need additional deacons, I think, and if there are men who are qualified, we need to appoint them. And Sam and Tony are doing a great job, and as I said the other day, if you're wanting to look and see what you're looking for, you got two to look at. And look at their families. They're good men, and they're doing a good job. And if we can appoint some more men who will be the caliber that Sam and Tony are, then we're in great shape as far as the servants that are being selected for the congregation here to serve in the role of deacon. You know, this has been far from any kind of a situation where you can come to some kind of major conclusion and present an invitation and all that kind of thing. But you know what? We don't want to let an opportunity go by to offer the opportunity to those who aren't Christians to come to Jesus Christ. As we think about what we are doing here and we think about the opportunities that we have, and even as we've come to a point where we're trying to even appoint additional deacons, it's exciting to see that the church is doing the things that it's doing, that we're seeing the growth that we're seeing. But you know, as I look out over this group, one of the things that bothers me and one of the challenges that I see laid before us is that there are people who are sitting here, both young and who are not so young, who have never come to Jesus Christ. And you wonder why that is. And only that person can answer that question. There's no way that I can look into the heart or that anyone else who is sitting here can look into the heart and know why you haven't come to Jesus Christ. But the one thing that I do know, if you haven't, then you're missing out on the greatest life that this world has to offer. Because as you consider all the options that you have, as you consider what you want to do and what you want to be, there are a lot of things that come up. There are a lot of opportunities presented to you, and many of them may look very, very appealing, but I'll guarantee you one thing, when it comes down to the end of time, and all is said and done, you're going to hope and you're going to wish that you were a child of God. That opportunity comes to you tonight. God sent His Son to die for us so that we can have that opportunity. He sacrificed His only Son so that we can be saved. And then He gave us the plan. He said, if you'll repent of your sins and confess your faith in Jesus as the Son of God and be baptized for those sins to be washed away, you can become one of My children. You can be sin-free. You can be cleansed. You can be pure. You can have the hope of living eternally with God when our pilgrimage here is over. Why would somebody turn that down? Why would somebody say, I don't want that? I don't understand it. But there are people sitting right here who are turning it down time after time after time. We want you to come to Jesus Christ. We want you to be a child of God. The angels in heaven would rejoice over one sinner that repents. And we hope that there's one here tonight who would like to do that and who will come forward as we stand and as we sing.
God.